You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, and I'm joined by Tim Fakeless, as I am pretty much every Wednesday, breaking down the games, talking a little basketball. Tim, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
This is a kind of a sad show, I feel like. I really thought that they had Toronto, or at least I thought they had a position to beat Toronto, especially after the first quarter came out 27-19. We're looking really crisp, but to Toronto's credit, they adjusted their game and got Valanciunas and Ibaka involved a lot more in this game, and they ended up coming out victorious 109-104. What were the kind of instant reactions for you watching this game as the Toronto Raptors started to pull away, especially in that second half?
Oh, it didn't shock me that it happened. I was never really too broken up about it, if nothing else, because I kind of saw it coming. It was a road back-to-back. They had played six games in 9 days. They had lost, or rather, they had beaten the Raptors without Jimmy Butler, and it just felt like a game that the Raptors were going to win. Even early on when the Wolves had a bigger lead, I just had a feeling in the back of my mind that the Raptors were eventually going to come back, if nothing else, because it's just kind of like the law of averages or whatever. It just felt like a game that the Raptors were going to come back and win. They're just too good of a team to like let an 8-10 point lead, whatever the biggest lead was, just sit back and take it. So when they came back, it didn't shock me. The Wolves have won a bunch of close games all year, so they definitely had a chance to win down the stretch. And as the Raptors were coming back, the Wolves had some chances to pull away. There were lots of opportunities to hit shots. The Raptors weren't hitting, and the Wolves didn't take advantage, so the Raptors ended up winning. The Raptors are one of the best teams in the league, so it's not necessarily a bad loss, but it was a bummer of a loss.
And, too, with a big night from Jimmy Butler, you just kind of hope that other guys are able to knock down some shots. Nobody else had there was a bunch of guys with double-digit points. Nobody else really had an outstanding night outside of Jimmy Butler for the Timberwolves. On the Raptors, you had DeRozan with the 23, and they were able to adjust. Kyle Lowry wasn't the main guy, and this is why I love Kyle Lowry so much and why I think he is definitely an all-star caliber player every year, is because he doesn't have to be the main guy every single night. And so 15 points, 9 assists, took a step back from the last time that the Timberwolves saw him in his 40-point performance. He doesn't have to be the primary scorer every single night, and he can still contribute. And that's kind of one of the things that hurt them throughout this game, is that he was able to really contribute but not have to be the guy knocking down shots. And some of those guys were DeRozan and Valanciunas and Ibaka, and they just attacked him with a different kind of offense than I think the Wolves saw when the Toronto Raptors were in Minnesota.
Yeah, and one guy you didn't mention, the guy that got dunked on twice in Minnesota, Jakob Poeltl, was outstanding in the second half. I think it's Fred VanVleet, who was a G League call-up. He's been really good. They just had a bunch of random dudes step up. You said Kyle Lowry wasn't like his usual Kyle Lowry self, but he was still really good in his own way. The Raptors are a good team because they're deep enough where if Lowry isn't hitting or even just deferring like he did last night, they have guys that can step up and hit for him. VanVleet was good. Poeltl was good. And like you said, Valanciunas was very Valanciunas. Like, it's rare that he takes more shots than Kyle Lowry, but he did in this game. And, he was 8 of 12. When he shoots a really high percentage. He's really, for a guy that doesn't really shoot threes, or he's starting to now, but for a guy that generally doesn't shoot threes, he's a really efficient player.
Oh, yeah, he definitely knows what shots he should take and stays away from the ones that he's not going to make, which to his credit is something. Self-awareness is a big part of sports in general. I like, too, that they got both those guys. With Ibaka, he had the 15 points and the 6 rebounds, and then Valanciunas with the 18 and 11 double-double. I like that they got those guys involved in the game right away. Just as far as their game plan, they wanted to kind of attack Towns and Taj Gibson and get those guys hitting from the get-go, and they didn't want to have another night where Valanciunas put up an egg or you had only a few points from Ibaka. So they were very intentional about what they wanted to do, and that was clear from the very beginning. Going back to the Timberwolves and what they did, is it concerning to you how little Towns is shooting over the last couple weeks? He only had 7 shots in this one.
Yeah, it's bizarre. If you take out the loss to Golden State a week ago or so, however long ago it was, he's averaging fewer than 8 shots per game in that stretch. Or maybe it's right at 8, because I tweeted something about it before the game was over, and I think he took another shot or two. But it's around 8 shots per game over his last 6, not counting the Golden State game where he took 24 shots. It's weird. It's concerning because he makes the All-Star team, and then his shot count just starts to sink. And I don't know who to blame for it or if blame is even necessary. I don't think it's Tom Thibodeau. I'm sure he wants Towns getting the ball. I'm not going to blame Jeff Teague necessarily, but I mean, his post-entry passing has been criticized this year, rightfully so. And I talked to Zach Harper on Twitter about it a little bit, and he suggested maybe Towns is hitting sort of a wall. He started playing more active defense, and that's a physically taxing thing to do if you're doing it for the first time in your career. So if you're throwing defense, if you're playing the defense that he's playing now, and he's played really good defense, it might be hard to exert that same amount of energy on the offensive end, or rather that the amount of energy that he's always exerted in his career to put up these crazy efficient numbers. I assume that he's going to figure it out at some point in the near future. He's not the type of guy that doesn't like getting his stats, and I'm not suggesting he's a stat. He's not a Ricky Davis. He's not a stat guy, but he's very good at getting his, and I assume he's going to get his looks back pretty soon, but it is a weird predicament or issue or problem, whatever you want to call it, that he's in right now.
Well, it definitely doesn't help when Wiggins has a night where he goes 7 of 22, and you're looking at Towns 4 of 7 next to him and going, maybe you should give up a few more of those instead of keep jacking those up.
So that's happening on nights when Wiggins has like over 30 points, when he's playing really well too. It's bizarre. Like, it's more justifiable when Wiggins is hitting, but it's happening in every single type of scenario. So, I mean, like, I understand the criticism of Wiggins taking 22 shots, 15 points. He wasn't good last night. He was inefficient. But it's happening on nights when Wiggins is efficient. There isn't continuity between Towns and the team right now, and it's bizarre.
No, yeah, it's just a little more glaring on a night like against Toronto.
Yeah.
But it is happening over the last week or 2 weeks. And it is strange when it is an all-star. It's not just a guy you are developing or a guy you think could be really good. This is an all-star talent that is not getting enough shots. If it is just something that's has to do with maybe he's just more tired, he's a little more fatigued, is there a way to scheme him maybe some easier looks in this offense, you think?
I mean, the only way I can think of is getting him the ball early in the shot clock to get him going to work so he's not hustling off ball and trying to bother his way into a better position. It might lead to more forced shots. That's my only concern with that. If the Wolves are winning and he's taking these low shot numbers, it doesn't bother me as much. But, I mean, they haven't – I think they've lost 6 of 9 or something like that. So they need to find a way to get him more shots within the flow of the offense. I assume if we asked Tibbs about it, he would say something along the lines of, well, he's getting shots within the flow of the offense. I don't know. Something.
Well, if the offensive flow dictates that he only takes 7 shots, I don't know if that's the offense that we want to really flow with either.
No, absolutely. He took the least number of shots on the team, or in the starting lineup, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not okay.
No, it's definitely not. We're going to take a quick break before we continue to talk about the Toronto game as well as some of the games coming up on their schedule. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft, playing real live NBA drafts right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code, LOTWOLVES. That's right, playing a real free in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code, LOTWOLVES. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering the Locked On Wolves listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with promo code LOTWOLVES. Make sure to join my draft lobbies. I'll be opening LOW lobbies on the draft website so you can play me personally in a draft lobby. Go ahead, show me how much better you are at fantasy basketball than me by drafting a team and taking my money. And make sure to follow me on there as well. Locked On Wolves, that's Locked On Wolves is my tag on there, my profile on there. Make sure you follow me so anytime I open up a draft lobby, you can go ahead right away and join and take my money. Join Draft today. So after a loss to the Atlanta Hawks, and you have the losses that they've had over January, they kind of cooled off after their home stand. Now you mentioned that the Toronto game was a back-to-back on the road. They also had the Warriors on a back-to-back on the road. Those are tough games, and Butler has had the injury, so they've had some stuff slated against them a little bit, but they have cooled off after a hot start to January. Are they just kind of limping to the All-Star break, and do you think that afterwards a little time off will really rejuvenate this team?
Yeah, I mean, this team, for whatever it's worth, they started off better. When this, like the schedule, this tough schedule that people were talking about, this tough stretch started off, the Wolves overachieved, if anything. They played their best basketball of the season, and they won some games that were supposed to be tough games, some of them by a lot of points. And then after that, they hit another stretch. Butler got hurt for a little bit. Crawford got hurt for a little bit. They won a couple games again they weren't supposed to win. They beat the Clippers and they beat the Raptors. And now they get Butler back and they have a continued tough stretch of games, and they lose a good chunk of them, including some bad ones. The Orlando loss was bad and the Atlanta loss was bad. So I feel like it's all evened out. And the fact that they've made it to this point, they're still, it's only by a half game because Oklahoma City is surging, but they're still the fourth seed in the West. I don't think this is necessarily a net loss for them. There's a lot of season to go, and it's not like they don't have San Antonio a couple more times, Houston three more times, Golden State two more times, but in Boston another time. But if I'm a Wolves fan, I'm not feeling concerned or panicked right now, because considering the way the stretch started for them, it could have been a lot worse. In fact, it could have been a whole lot worse. But the fact that they started off so well has me feeling good right now. The bad losses, I think, were expected at this point. Maybe not the ones to Atlanta and to Orlando, but once to Toronto, Golden State, especially considering the road back-to-back circumstances, those are tough wins no matter what.
No, for sure. And I wanted to talk a little bit. I was talking with Dave Moore about this the other day, but I wanted to talk a little bit about this with you. Don't be mean.
I don't know him.
The Hawks and Magic losses. Early in the season when they lost to the Suns, it was one of those situations where there's 82 games. You're going to lose to some bad teams eventually, and not to blow them out of proportion. Is there concern for you? Because Dane and I were talking about how there might be a little concern that there's the bad losses are piling up. The losses to poor teams are starting to pile up, and it's starting to be a little bit maybe of a bad trend more than just a bad night for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago I tweeted out something about how every team – every high-end team in the NBA, and that includes the Golden State Warriors, has bad losses to their record. But as time goes on, those losses are really starting to pile up, and it's playing down to the competition seems to be a thing for this team. And yeah, I think at this point it's something to be concerned about, or at least something that Tom Thibodeau and the coaching staff needs to address. I think it's going to be addressed. Like, a team with Jimmy Butler and Tom Thibodeau, that doesn't strike me as something that's going to be a long-term thing. And when I say long-term, I mean not just this season, but going forward. At the very least, mm-hmm. you'll have Jimmy Butler next year, too, and Tom Thibodeau will obviously be around. So it's a problem this year, but again, like I always go back to the fact that this team and two-thirds of its main scoring core, sort of that, I'd call it the main core, Towns, Wiggins, and Butler. Two-thirds of that is brand new to winning in the NBA. So as good as Butler is and as well-prepared as Thibodeau is on an every-night basis, two-thirds of that team is still trying to figure out how to bring it every night. And they've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go for this team as a whole. But, yeah, in the short term, those losses are, I think, a concern at this point. They're piling up to the point where you can't ignore them and just chop it up to everyone else is doing. Because yeah. The Wolves have more bad losses than most of the better teams in the league right now.
No, yeah. I guess the silver lining, too, could be that they really play up to their competition as well. They really play. They beat right. They routed the Cavs, and they have played close games. The Rockets game was close for a time. I know it ended pretty at a pretty good distance, but they hung with the Rockets for a little bit, and they hung with the Warriors a couple times early in the first half of both those games. It's just a little concerning when you're losing to the Hawks 105-100, especially when it's stuff like you're calling a timeout that you don't have.
Yeah, I remember calling out like, oh my god, did Jeff Teague just pull a Chris Webber? Like, I've never seen that before on an NBA court. That blew my mind. But I don't think they actually ended up calling the timeout. Otherwise, you would have shot technical free throws. But that lack of readiness was concerning.
They cut to Tibbs after that, and it honestly looked like he was going to start crying just of sheer frustration in the moment. It was
Man, that's just his face. That's what he looks like.
What a man. Like, what a legend.
He is a great coach. He's an emotional coach. But he gets really concerned about the smallest things. Not that that was a small thing. That was major crunch time situation. But, man.
The man gets heated.
Yeah. He is passionate about his job.
As we all hope to be. Looking ahead to the games they have before the All-Star break, kind of looking at the broad scope of what they have left before they get some time off. They have the Bucks at home, along with the Pelicans at home. Then they're on the road to the Cavaliers and the Bulls before they take on the Kings and the Rockets and the Lakers all home. Looking at this stretch of games, you've got the Bucks are a really good team. The Cavaliers still have LeBron James. The Rockets are a very good team. The Pelicans could be a good game, but with Boogie down, that team might still be reeling from that injury. And then the Bulls and the Kings and the Lakers, all kind of down teams. Do you expect the Timberwolves to have a winning record through this next couple week stretch before the All-Star break?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Milwaukee's going to be tough just because the Wolves don't match up terribly well with them. New Orleans, that game concerns me more than it probably should, only because you're at home, the Super Bowl is happening, there's distractions everywhere, and like you said, the Pelicans should be reeling from the lack of DeMarcus Cousins, but as we just discussed, the Wolves aren't necessarily great about playing up to the competition, even if it's lesser competition than, say, some of the better teams in the league. Cleveland and Chicago, plug, Dane Moore and I will be at both of those games.
Hey.
Those are both winnable games. Cleveland, they're down Kevin Love now. I mean, they're reeling already from being just like the worst defensive team I've ever seen. And Chicago isn't great. Sacramento isn't great. But then they have Houston in two of three games. This whole stretch, the rest of February, or all of February, really, there's a chance for them to really go on a run. The worst of this schedule pretty much ends with this loss in Toronto on Tuesday. So yeah, to answer your question, I think they can absolutely have a winning record through February, and honestly through the rest of the season. It's just not as grueling. The worst of it is over.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the Cavaliers defense, but really the only road teams they take on until the All-Star break are the Cavaliers and the Bulls. Those are probably the two best defenses to go on the road against if you're looking at just how to cleanly finish out the season before the break. So that's a really nice stretch. I know the Rockets at home is intimidating, even though it's a home game, but still, I mean, this is definitely much better than the few weeks of basketball we've watched with all the travel that they've done.
Yep, but with all that in mind, I mean, the Wolves can't play mind games with themselves. They can't think, oh, well, the worst of it's over, so we don't have to go as hard. They need to play these teams like they're all the Warriors. Otherwise, none of these games are gimmies. At this point, that's been proven. If you can lose to the Hawks, you can lose to the Pelicans without DeMarcus Cousins.
You can lose to the Lakers.
Yeah, you can totally lose to the Lakers.
I want to go back to that Pelicans game really quick. I know that the Super Bowl is in town, and I feel like I should be more concerned about it than I am, and you're probably the appropriate amount of worry about it. I know the Super Bowl is in town, and it's going to be kind of crazy all weekend here, and they're going to have the Bucks, and so that's going to be a tough game. And so I think they're going to give a lot of effort to the Bucks and maybe expect to beat the Pelicans, a team that they have waxed pretty good a couple times this season already. But without Boogie, I think it's just easier to defend Anthony Davis. And at that point, you're kind of just, if you're the Pelicans, you're hoping that Holiday drops like 30, 40 points to keep you in this game. What about this team should I be more concerned about?
Well, it's less about the players on the team to me and more about just, again, the way that the Wolves have played against teams that they're supposed to beat. If you contain Davis, which is tough to do, then, yeah, you have to make sure that Jrue Holiday doesn't play like the former All-Star that he is, or that Rajon Rondo isn't setting up his teammates. Darius Miller has been great about hitting shots. I mean, it could be anybody. They signed Mike James recently. I mean, who knows who could come out and have a big game. But the point is, random guys have had big games against the Wolves, even when they contain their team's star. Like we just talked about with Toronto, they did a good job with Kyle Lowry, or maybe Lowry took a step back himself and chose to. The Wolves lost because Serge Ibaka and Jonas Valanciunas, and of course, DeMar DeRozan, had big games. So taking out the team star doesn't necessarily guarantee a victory for the Wolves. Granted, when we compare the Raptors and the Pelicans, that's probably not fair because the Raptors are a much deeper team. But I think the point still stands. These are all NBA players, and if the Wolves don't respect them, they'll make you pay.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I think after a really nice December with Jimmy Butler kind of just dominating everybody, we're back to that early season where I think a lot of these games, whether you like it or not, are going to be closer than they probably should be.
Yeah, I mean, the Wolves are good enough where they can blow some teams out, and they're also not dominant enough where they're going to do it all the time. They're at that point where they're going to blow a couple teams out. They could blow out the Pelicans again. They could blow out the Cavs again. They could spoil the revenge game against Zach LaVine and blow the Bulls out. They could blow the Kings out. And they're good enough where they could honestly blow Houston out for a game. Like, they're good enough to do that. But they're also not good enough where they could also lose to Chicago or Cleveland or Houston. I mean, they're one of the better teams in the league, but they're not at that dominant stage where every game is a gimme, or every game against a bad team, rather, is a gimme.
That's just the ups and downs of the Timberwolves season right there, honestly. All right, we're going to take another break, and then we're going to get to Tim's highly touted segment of the week. So Tim, every week, gives us his top articles in basketball to read, called it Editor's Choice, where he's picking out an article about the Timberwolves and an NBA article that you should read. It's all about educating the people. We know that Tim is an educator himself. He's molding the minds of America in so many different ways. This is the key
former,
for him.
Former educator. Let's not push this.
No. You're an educator right now because you're going to tell us which articles to be reading. Those are assignments. That's homework. You're an educator. Molding minds. Go ahead, Tim.
Sounds like you're actually giving me homework after the book report.
It's that reverse psychology.
So I've got the Wolves one I got is from Jace Frederick with the Pioneer Press. He got word of a 6 a.m. Friday practice last week in Golden State after the Wolves lost to the Warriors. The Wolves got up at 6 a.m. the next morning to work out together. And Jay says just a quick little piece about how the team got together, and they one person, I'm going to have you read the article, one person refers to their team as a special group for what they've got there. And the fact that they're able to get up at 6 a.m. and practice after a loss on the West Coast, I think says a lot about where this team wants to be down the road. The other piece I've got, and it's a week old, but I missed it until recently, so I'm going to plug it. It's by George Dorman on The Athletic. It's called The Tao of Jack, How Old School Center Jack Cooley Found Hoops and Happiness in a Spot in the NBA. It's just a sort of a story about a lesser-known player, Jack Cooley, finding his way onto the Sacramento Kings. And you might not know who he is, but it's a really long and it's a really well-written piece. And a lot of, if you're into Lee Jenkins articles, you'll like this one. So check that out at The Athletic.
Thank God. I always thought that the Sacramento Kings were just one center away from being a really good team.
Yep. The man, look out. Jack Cooley and Scal Labissiere. They're going to, actually, I like Scal a lot. But yeah, the Kings have ways to go.
And so many centers. What is that, like 8 centers now?
Oh, man. Yeah, they have a bunch. I remember, who was it? Or no, it wasn't the Kings. What am I thinking of? Someone was trying to show me how the Wolves should trade for Kemba Walker by trading Gorgie Jang, Cole Aldrich, and Justin Patton, and the first-round pick for Kemba Walker. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, didn't they just sign Dwight Howard? Like, how many centers does that team have? You just want to give them 3 more?
Was the Kings GM trying to tell you this?
Yeah, probably.
Don't worry. What you need is 6 centers, and then you've really started to get your team cooking. It's all going to swing back to 90s basketball.
You take what the Bucks are doing by going tall, and you take it up a notch. 5 centers in the starting lineup.
Well, you don't want one man who can dribble.
No, nope, nope.
Oh, man.
You just back them down like you're in the post all the way up to half court. And then you dish it right into the post. It's easy.
We want every single guy to be posting up all the time.
That's
in the
right.
Offense.
All post up.
All right. Well, this is a fun one. This is a jubilant end to the podcast. We're going to be right back here tomorrow to really go in depth on the Milwaukee Bucks game. And we will also be talking about the games over the weekend. It is Super Bowl week, but there's still plenty of basketball. So you should be watching basketball in the NBA as well. Definitely check out zonecoverage.com also to check out all the written content on there, as well as other podcasts that Tim and I are on. Tim, thanks for coming on again.
No problem, Colton. Have fun at the Super Bowl media availability or whatever.
I will. I'm going to try and ask my best questions.
That's right. Do your thing. Go talk to JB Smoove.
He was actually, I saw him. I was right there with him. Who were we interviewing? It was Devin McCourty. And JB Smoove was talking about if you liked the straight edge razor or the clippers to get the hair all the way down.
That's important journalism. I don't know who Devin McCourty is, but I assume he's a football player.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll not get into it. Well, I'll explain it to you some other time, Tim.
Sounds good, man.
All righty, that's it for another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves,